heard and used, and to honor the nothing about us without us as a respectful approach. The agreement needs to specify that Portland Police Bureau shall disclose all information related to the area in question for a particular board or entity. Basically, no advisory board, no additional boards, oversight bodies, or anything are going to be able to do their job if they don't have their information. So as a member of the Crisis Intervention Team Advisory Board, there was a lack of transparency. I requested training materials. They were refused for the CIT mandatory training. I requested that outside trainers be considered. I'd been a trainer previously. There were many people from our community who'd been trainers. That was refused. I requested to attend the CIT training. That was refused. So in order to really make any difference, you need to know what it is that you're looking at, what you're talking about, and be able to make those suggestions. And I think we're a very dedicated group who is really trying to make a difference, but the truth is we weren't really looking at the information we needed to.
Did you apply to be on the Training Advisory Council?
No.
Okay. Can you submit the rest of your testimony so we have it in your contact information?
Okay. Am I out of time?
You are.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your service to the city, and that's going to change. Mr. Handelman?
Yes, I'm Dan Handelman again with Portland Cop Watch, and I'm also a member of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition on Justice and Police Reform Steering Committee. I want to say that we met, Portland Cop Watch met along with the AMA Coalition and with the DOJ a couple of days ago, and I am not convinced thoroughly that they understand all the issues that are confronting the community. I'm not sure that they understand our oversight system, which they complained was Byzantine, and I'm not sure that this report goes far enough, even with the changes that you've made. And some of the changes are changes that we recommended, so we do thank you for those, but it still is not enough. The DOJ was here for the Occupy Portland eviction. They were here for Liz Nichols being pepper sprayed in the mouth. They were here this weekend when the pepper spray attacked the young students marching, and they have not said anything about crowd control violence. So I'm going to kind of cover the points that the AMA Coalition's letter covers under officer accountability. The enabling of the Independent Police Review Division to do meaningful investigations, it still needs to be cleared out more, spelled out more clearly what that means, and if it means changing the PPA agreement, say that. As you heard from CRC, it's not possible for them to complete their appeals process in 21 days. That really needs to be changed to at least 60 days after the appeal is filed. We also have said before, the police review board has to be open to the public and particularly to the person who about whom the hearing is being held, the person who's been shot, who's been beaten. They should at least be able to testify in front of that board if the whole community can't. Supported by the evidence standard of review that is binding the CRC when they try to make decisions, this just happened last night at the hearing that they had, has to be removed from this agreement so that we as a community can work on what that finding means instead of it being in an agreement that's enforceable by a court. So we're hoping that you will pull that that definition out of the agreement. And while the change from the CPRC being dissolved is very good, we also wish there were more about people of color in the overall report.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all. Nix. Oh, sorry. I went out of order. So Dr. Walker.
Sure. Thank you very much. I'm Daryl Walker. I'm the CEO for Cascadia Behavioral Health here in Portland, serving Portland, Clackamas, and Lane County. Cascadia's primary mission is serving people with mental illness as well as with addiction. Dr. Maggie Bennington-Davis and I have worked together on our presentation, and Maggie is going to present most of our points. I do want to take a moment, however, to express my appreciation for the hard work that's gone into this effort to improve the encounters between police officers and people with mental illness. And equally as important is improving the lives of people with mental illness within our community. So I'll hand the rest of my time over to Dr. Bennington-Davis.
Thanks, Dr.
Walker. Is that legal for him to give me his time?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. All right.
It's worth a try.
My name's Maggie Bennington-Davis, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for this opportunity to address you. Cascadia provides many pieces of Multnomah County's mental health crisis system, and was also the project lead for Safer PDX, which included a broad membership across Portland and Multnomah County and was extremely helpful in informing our system about what strengths and gaps are present in our current system. And I would be remiss if I didn't call out the leadership of Commissioner Fritz, as well as the participation of Chief Reese, County Commissioner Chip Rack, and Chief Operating Officer of the county, Joanne Fuller. My comments are informed by the work of Safer PDX. Cascadia, in fact, supports all of the components of the agreement. And as others who have gone before me tonight have said, I have some additions I'd like to make. One major thing I'd like to say, though, that overarches all of this is that I really encourage a robust collaboration among the city, Multnomah County, and the other counties, for that matter, and the coordinated care organizations. We cannot do this in isolation from one another. We are all in this together. I have four additional suggestions. The first one is that, you know, in this time of economic austerity and pressure to do something sooner rather than later, Portland and Multnomah County's crisis services actually already have many desirable components. So we suggest inventorying them and leveraging the components that already exist and managing them as a system. And I'll give you an example later if you wish. Number two is ensuring that access to the right services at the right time is really the key ingredient to decreasing unwanted police contact with people with mental illness. Most people who come into contact with the police are either not connected with services or are not in the right intensity of services. So increasing access to those services is key to the success of this. And it is imperative that, however else crisis services are enhanced in this process, that access and enrollment and routine services are not disrupted, and optimally that they're actually increased. I have two more points that I'll make very briefly. Put into place information sharing processes and programs so that community-based providers are immediately aware when an enrolled client is in contact with police or jail and or ERs and need assistance.
Or anybody. In the continuum of care.
There you go. And then finally, the majority of transport of people in crisis to ER or assessment or hospitalization is via police currently, and finding an alternative safe method to securely transport people in a timely and humane and safe manner would very much decrease the frequency of police contact. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you all very much. Next four.
Joanne Hardesty, Greg Cafori, Jason Cafori, and Ben Berry. And they'll be followed by Kevin Tocallo, Kali Lindben, Greg Forward, and Catherine Moore.
Hi, Ms. Hardesty. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Thank you. It's good to be back. For the record, I'm Joanne Hardesty. Last week I submitted in writing recommendations for the settlement agreement. In addition, I spoke briefly with Commissioner Amanda Fritz this week and also provided some additional information. I want to ask three questions. At the end of the day, after we've invested $26 million, after we have attempted to use a self-defeating accountability system to hold the police accountable, will we be able to fire bad police officers? Will the community trust that when they call the police, that they will be helped rather than killed or hurt? And has the culture of Portland Police Bureau fundamentally changed? For me, at the end of the day, those are the three questions that are foremost in my mind. And I have to tell you, this settlement agreement does not get us there. If we're going to invest a lot of money in mental health, I would love to see the city give the money to the mental health professionals. I am very concerned that we're going to pretend that we have a system where the police, in fact, are excellent at responding to mental health calls if we don't, in fact, make sure that we're training police officers in that manner. I will call your attention to two articles in the Oregonian this morning. Both were court cases that were settled because of police officers. One, they arrested a gentleman because he exercised his constitutional rights to not be searched. They arrested him. The courts found that the police should not have arrested him, and he was awarded a settlement. The second case was a man who had a business in Martin Luther King Boulevard, And he was arrested after someone in his store wouldn't leave. Ironically, he was an African-American man, and he ended up in the back of the police car when he was being challenged in his business. And so in both of those cases, the jury and the judge decided that the police acted inappropriately. And I would ask you, was there any accountability internally for those police officers? And I'll answer it, no. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kafouri.
I'm Greg Kafouri. I'm here with my son, Jason. Our law firm also includes Mark McDougall, my partner. We do police cases, and I can tell you we probably talk to 50 people for every case that we actually take. In the cases we do, we review internal affairs files, so we know what's in them, and the public doesn't because they're not public, and we're not allowed to share them with the public. The great lesson we learned from reading these files is, as Senator Wayne Morris once said, those who control the procedure control the outcome. And as long as we have a system where the police are investigating the police, we're never going to get the kind of police department that we want. It is a source of great sadness to me to watch decade after decade really well-meaning, intelligent people pouring enormous amounts of effort into reviewing police cases as part of this board, and what have they produced? Essentially nothing in all this time. It's an astonishing waste, and you know, they should recognize that they are window dressing. I agree with the critics who say that what we see here is an establishment of new levels of bureaucracy in a system which is already accurately described as Byzantine. In the 40 years or so that I can remember, there's never been an officer fired for physically abusing a citizen. It simply never happens, and I don't think it's going to happen under this present system. What we have to have is an independent agency. You go right there. They have the power to compel testimony, conduct their own investigations, and the power to do something about it. We've heard a lot about training. Let me tell you, training police is a waste of time. When an officer brutalizes somebody, they know what they're doing. They're not trying to consult some rule book. And finally, I want to say that until we have a system that compels the worst of the officers to be fired, all we're doing is spinning our wheels. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kafouri. Hi, welcome, Mr. Kafouri.
Thank you. I want to tell just a moment something that happened to me in the last 2 weeks. I walked out of my office and I saw an African-American man clearly having a mental health crisis, and he was standing against a wall and he had his arms raised behind his back and he was screaming, "I surrender, I surrender." And an officer behind him with a taser drawn walked up to him, and as he approached with a closed fist, punched the man in the back of the head. The man fell to the ground. Multiple officers rushed, jumped in, and the man was taken away. Now, I've ordered the police reports to find out who was involved in this incident, but this happened to me 10 feet in front of my eyes. And we get calls, you have to understand, day in and day out, and 98% of the calls involve the Portland police and abuse claims. They do not involve the Lake Oswego police. They do not involve the Beaverton police. There is a cultural problem here that has to be addressed. And I think it's summed up quite effectively with the case of Shamika Newman, the woman who asked for the business card a couple years ago, and the jury awarded her $82,000. When she was behind bars, she asked the officer, she said, "I'm going to file a civil complaint because this is ridiculous." And you know what he said? He said, "Go ahead. I don't care. It's not my money." Mm-hmm. That's the heart of the problem that we're dealing with here, is we don't have a culture where the police have any accountability for their own actions. There's no system where an officer who's found to have violated a citizen's rights in a jury room has any discipline that comes out of it. There's been no discipline in that case. There's been no discipline in all the rest of these recent jury verdicts. And until we have a system where the Portland police actually feel threatened, that citizens outside can come in and do a review and discipline, we're going to be spinning our wheels, just like my father said. Thanks.
Can you keep me posted on that case you described?
We will.
Next four.
Kevin Ticallo.
No clapping. No clapping. Listen, no clapping, okay? Joe, others, I will have you removed from the chambers. I have a job of making sure that everyone feels comfortable expressing their views, whatever they are. And that means no noise during these proceedings. And I will have you removed. So, two more.
Kevin Tocalo, Kylie Lubin, Greg Forward, and Catherine Moore.
Come forward. All right. Yeah. Would you like to begin?
I have a video I wanted to submit, so they're working on that. So.
Okay. Hi. Welcome.
Hi, Mayor. Hi, Commissioners. My name is Greg Forward. I'm a resident of Salem, Oregon. Before I start, I'd like to state publicly that I do not hold a grudge against any single police officer, but I do hold a grudge against police policing police. I moved to Oregon a little more than a year ago, but I was well aware of the issue of brutality being conducted by the Portland police well before I ever got here. And I'm speaking here before you today as a concerned citizen who has witnessed an overuse of force on multiple occasions. I am a member of Occupy Portland, and I do support the Constitution of the United States. On May 1st, while taking part in May Day demonstrations, I witnessed many others who were assaulted by the Yellow Jacket officers of the Portland Police Bicycle Unit. Officers then and since have effectively used their bicycles as baseball bats for attempting to utilize our constitutionally protected First Amendment rights to free speech. This incident in particular occurred, to my best approximation, at the intersection of 3rd and Salmon. The second incident I encountered that day, while again standing on a sidewalk, was at Yamhill and 6th. I was being pinned to the side of Tiffany and Company by the sergeant in charge of the mounted patrol unit. The gelding that he was riding is the weight equivalent of a small car. And he had me pinned up against the wall for 15 seconds. That's terrorism to me, terrorizing me, sorry. I did file a complaint with the IPRB several days later, which resulted in nothing but wasted paper. Also, this past Saturday, November 3rd, I was thrown to the ground by Portland police officers while standing on a public sidewalk for attempting to act as an observer. Before landing on the ground, my head struck the handlebars of the Yellow Jacket bike swarm. While this may have been unintentional, I would wager a bet that any deaths that have been accrued on behalf of the Portland police came as a result of unintended consequences. There is both video and pictorial evidence of the above incidents to support my claims. I know these incidents are mild in comparison to the callous and derogatory use of force that the PPD administers to the colored community. I have 10 seconds, please. 10 more seconds.
Go ahead.
Thank you. On Saturday, I stood about 15 feet away from where the chemical weapons were deployed, and I heard no warning that pepper spray would be deployed. If this is in fact true, it seems to me that this would be in violation of 635.10, Section 2E of the Portland Police Policy and Procedures Manual. In 1993, the U.S. Army concluded in an Aberdeen Proving Ground study.
So I need you to, that's more than 10 seconds, that's 28. So I appreciate your testimony.
Pepper spray would cause mutagenic effects, carcinogenic effects, sensitization, cardiovascular and pulmonary toxicity, neurotoxicity, as well as possible human fatalities.
Thank you for your testimony.
Just asthma. Thank you.
Turn it in to Carla or email it to us. Thanks. It's all right. Hi, welcome.
Hi, I have some video testimony as well. I'm not sure. Do you want to go first, Kevin?
I don't know how to start it.
Just click on the link. Okay, I'm Catherine Moore, and the video testimony that I'm presenting is from Shemansky Park. It's just part on December 3rd. It was part of the police brutality that I witnessed and experienced that evening.
Okay.
Ripping kids down, destroying public property. Fire very aggressive the way they're mowing through this camp right now.
Think about that.
Swinging people, sticks, and whatnot.
So did you want to offer some comments to this? Because your time is...
That night, I can stop it. That night, I just really wanted to show some of what we've been experiencing over the past year. For myself, personally, I was assaulted that night. I was also assaulted on May Day. The IPR complaint that I filed regarding my assault on May Day, where I had documented concussion, bruising up and down my arms, was... returned to me saying that they, with the incorrect date, with incorrect officers' names. I then filed it again. They then returned it back to me saying that my complaint had been found to be unsubstantiated. I strongly urge civilian oversight on the police force, as it is now currently the culture is so corrupt that we need to have civilians that can actually oversee it rather than be hampered by the corruption that's currently.
Thanks for your testimony. Appreciate it. Ma'am, would you like to go?
Yes, I would. I didn't know whether anybody had spoken to you about TASER as a human rights issue. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm Kalei Lubin. And so I thought I'd like to just say a few words. 2 minutes is just a few words. You have here in the agreement that there should be a prohibition against the use of TASERs for pain compliance. Pain compliance... specifically against those suffering from mental illness. The trouble is that the UN has identified pain compliance as torture for anybody, human beings. And so that's why I'd like to bring this up as a human rights issue. You, as a city, being asked to comply with some stipulations of the Department of Justice, share joint oversight for this concept. Because the United States is a signatory to a treaty, and it's the United States Department of Justice that has to account for how TASERs are used in the United States, and they have to make that accounting to the United Nations. And so as a consequence, I was looking for the Department of Justice to be more proactive in oversight of use of TASER. The other part of this is that although the United Nations tries to regulate nations, there's an area where it opens the doors for individuals to come and file complaints, and that would be in the use of torture. So as long as our Human Rights Commission is going to be handling the subject of human rights, then I would like that commission to open the doors for filing individual complaints from Portland to the United Nations. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your testimony. Thank you all. Nick's four. Oh, I'm sorry. We have video.
Yeah.
Is it working for you?
See if I can find it here real quick.
Did you just say you have an Apple computer?
Yeah, it's a PC, so I'm not familiar with it.
Sorry. Our technology. Thank you for your testimony. Our technology has failed you, but maybe you could email the link to us.
I have all the emails that were, or the videos provided were in one email.
So if you could email just samadams@portlandoregon.gov, we can distribute it.
Okay,
the next four.
Are David Hennessy, Nick Caleb, Joe Walsh, and I believe it's Molandi Carbarn, and they'll be followed by Charles Johnson, Jack Depew, Johnny Engelbert Noel, and Jesse Spongler.
Hi, welcome. Would you like to begin, sir?
Absolutely. I have a video as well. My legal name is David Hennessy. Live stream protest events in Portland and around the country for OPDX Live under the name Jesse Haddon, and I'll try and...
Why don't you work on getting that ready to go, and I'll, in the meantime, why don't we hear from you? Welcome.
Sure. Hi, my name is Nicholas Caleb. I'm a university professor at Concordia University.
I'm also an attorney and the son of the longest serving district attorney in the state. And I have a profound respect for law enforcement as a...
Who is the longest serving?
Ed Caleb, now after Shrunk is gone, in Klamath Falls. Never had much occasion to interact with the police until this last year, mostly in the context of activism, first as a legal observer and later as an organizer of protests. And it's been an interesting experience. And the one thing that I can say is that I'm pretty sure that constitutional rights are violated on a daily basis. It's opened my eyes to a lot of other abuses that I would have never been open to before. So this last weekend, I was at the November 3rd protests, and I witnessed pepper spray being deployed on high school students, the elderly, and veterans, which bugged me enough. But later on, after I'd been compiling evidence and hearing testimony from people that were there, we found, you know, pictures of riot police posing with Elvis impersonators moments afterwards that the Portland police thought was funny enough to actually post on their webpage. We saw people, the same cops, driving by and waving at the protesters as they were down on the ground. Later on, folks went to the city council or to the Justice Center to actually get complaint forms to file complaints, and people were celebrating as if they'd won a football game. And it was, this kind of stuff is just, it's a huge bummer all the time. So what I see is a cultural issue in the police department. I think that, as I've been able to see it, there's no accountability. We can't punish people who are doing the wrong thing. In the context of political rights, it's frustrating, but in the context of the city as a whole, it's even more frustrating with what I've been hearing. So I'd like to join in demanding a independent citizen oversight commission with subpoena powers and the ability to dismiss officers who are in violation of civil rights. I think it's the only way that we can get rid of this moral hazard and fix the culture of the Portland police. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the technology going
to
work?
Yes, we're ready to go.
Okay, great.
This video was taken May 1st for the May Day demonstration. This was in the evening around Yamhill.
Whoa! Whoa! Hey! Holy shit!
People had previously been dancing in the streets in a political celebration.
Could you get a little closer to the mic so we can hear you with the background?
Prior to these random assaults on the sidewalk, people had been dancing through the streets in a rather festive political celebration. Keep in mind that the people being tackled and punched here are on the sidewalk. All throughout May Day, with the exception of the portion of the days of festivities that were permitted by the city, this is what happened. It was people assembling in the street, interspersed with just these intensely forceful attacks. Riots really the only way that comes to mind for that. I've never seen in any of the cities that I've been to, even Chicago for the NATO protests, the type of brutality and sadism, really, that I saw on May Day here in Portland. And I know that it's affected me. Having been there, having seen this, it's affected a lot of people. And I want to join with my colleagues in calling for real civilian oversight of the police department with the power to do something about events like this.
Mr. Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. You're sitting here listening to a lot of testimony. You can go online and see dozens of videos just like the one you just saw. It all comes down to the relationship between the police officer and the person that he's confronting. That's it. You can have all of the people in the world, but it comes down to that. And you've got a major problem with your police department. It's not a simple problem of somebody standing on a street corner having a nervous breakdown and the police don't react well. That's not it. What it is their attitude. And their attitude was told to me a few weeks ago when a police officer kicked somebody right outside your door. Right here. To the hall. Somebody kicked a man sleeping. And I went up to him and I said, why do you do that? What is that? Why don't you just ask him to wake up? And he looked at me and said, go away. And I said, well, okay, I'll file a report. And he laughed. And he said, they're not going to do anything to me. This is Portland. This is Portland. When are you going to do something, Mr. Mayor? Do something really good. Tell these police departments to knock it off and treat people like human beings. That's what we want. That's what we'll get, whether you do it or the next mayor or the next mayor. Someday, we will have a police department that we are proud of. We are not proud of you or of these cops. No!
Welcome. Thanks for your waiting.
Mr. Mayor, yes, I have to tell you that I welcome the...
Could you get closer to the microphone so we can hear you?
Yes, I welcome the Department of Justice investigation of our police, Portland Police Department, you know. The OJ should have investigated this abuse of Portland Police Department decades ago, you know. I have been a... my family had been destroyed. Myself have been destroyed because I happened to purchase a house for my family next to a Portland police sergeant, right? And he and his, that police officer, that police sergeant at the time, he was living in Vancouver, Washington, but his parents were next to my house. I didn't know that I purchased my home next to the parents of a Portland police. Well, when I, for the first week when I moved in my house, the parents of the Portland police officer came and says, well, I'm sorry about this house because we had been trying to purchase this home for our friend from England to come and live in it, but now you purchased, but you're not welcome to live here. And she said, well, my son is a Portland police sergeant, and you know. And 2 days later, he came and talked to me. He says, well, you know, I think you and your family have to move out because my parents didn't like you to move out here, you know what I'm saying, because... And I had made complaints about him, several complaints. This issue during Mayor Vera Katz, right? And I have made several complaints against him. And he was warned, my police sergeant, next neighbor, he was warned by Lieutenant Maciek, and he told him not to bother Mr. Carbos anymore, right? And... he used his other police officer to start harassing me. You know what I'm saying? He used to come over and give tickets to my cars, $100 a ticket, parking in my driveway, you know? And I have to fight this. I have to go to the parking patrol area, and I tell them my story, and they reimburse the towing and the tickets and all that. I was living in a nightmare, okay? The police officer, he came up to me and told me that, you know, if you don't move out from this neighborhood, I'm going to use my higher authority finally they filed charges against me and false charges, and I was arrested and I was convicted, and I had 104 months in the prison, and my case is still pending in the court today. Mm. And the police have investigated $80,000 of my own property, and that property was not, any problems, and they're supposed to return it to me while I was in the prison. They auctioned that property and sold it on the eBay.
So thank you for sharing your experience, and you say it's still continuing?
The case is still pending, and I'm not giving up. It's been 10 years now since this is here, and I hope I will leave until the justice has been served.
I've given you extra time, but I got to get other people up here. I appreciate you sharing your story, and hang in there. Next four
are Charles Johnson, and Charles, if you'd sit by that mic by the computer, Jack DePew, Johnny Englehart Knoll, and Jesse Sponberg. And they'll be followed by Michael O'Callaghan, Seth Woolley, Elmira Rodriguez, and Lindy Light.
Good evening, or good afternoon. Would you like to begin, sir?
Yes, good evening, Mayor, Council members. My name is Charles Johnson, and I think we'll forego video testimony, and we'll talk about two important police procedure incidents. One, as you've heard from prior testimony, there's been a number of people testimony about concern about pepper spray. We've had no discussion of how can people who are breaking the law be pepper sprayed and then never cited for breaking the law. There's a control problem here. We know that high school students were doing something so bad that they had to get sprayed in the face with a chemical weapon. But amazingly, the bike cops and the riot cops never had the opportunity to actually use the law to ticket or arrest people. So, ergo, the force doesn't seem to have been necessary. The other serious issue we have is that if you read questionable sources such as the Oregonian, you'll find out that you've promoted a fascist Nazi to do the training, Captain Kruger. How can the citizens have confidence if the best thing that Michael Reese can do is say, I looked for a good trainer, I found a Nazi sympathizer, how about that? I hope that there will be, I have not had time to research that thoroughly, but I know there are bureaucratic processes about civil servants and stuff like that, but I think y'all should be ashamed that that is the best you can do. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, would you like to begin?
I'm shocked to hear that Mr. Kruger is training that. If that is the reality, shame on you, Mayor. Shame on you. My name is Johnny Englehart Noel. I came to this country 50 years ago. I was born in Mexico. I'm a Spanish interpreter on the board of the Elliott neighborhood. I cannot believe what he just said. That's where it started, overreaction and people of racist thinking. In Vietnam, I survived by thinking the day I got orders, I thought, how would I deal with my emotions if I actually had to kill someone? The way I realized that was if communism was bad, I was doing it good. So I think in empathy with these policemen who are human beings, that is their thinking. And that is what's most difficult to reverse. And if this is true, what this man just said, Mr. Kruger is the source of the problem you have here. Because his culture believes that if he kills a counterculture person, he's doing a good, which is totally understandable, but totally evil. This is the most evil thing there is. How can you do that? If people here say you're bad and somebody else says they're bad, that's why I became a Buddhist and I remained so for 43 years. I drove a cab for 20 years. I never used a gun, never will. Last time I did, I was training as a guard for nuclear weapons on the destroyer I was on. I happen to have bipolar disorder. I don't have it very bad. I go up and down. I don't go left and right. But I just had an incident at the VA hospital. I need your attention, Mr. Mayor.
I have to look at the room, but I'm listening to you.
I don't think so. I just had an incident at the VA hospital where I was yelling at a pedestrian that almost ran me over and two others, and the policeman came at me with his hand and his weapon. That culture is very similar here. If you don't do something to reverse it, shame on you. What will St. Peter say to you? Thank you.
Well, nice to see you guys again. My name is Jesse Sponberg, and I'm actually here today to show you guys a video. I kind of donated my time, but if I could spend the first 30 seconds. There's some that I noticed today about these stories, especially the ones related to Occupy Portland. So there's two hands here. There's the financial hand, which means that we're spending all this police money. We had 150 people out there for a peaceful protest on Saturday, 150 police officers. Then we go to court, and we don't got our stuff together in court, so that wastes court money. Then when we're done, we usually end up having to give money to somebody that was a victim of the police. So in this age of austerity, I just think it's really horrible that we just keep repeating this cycle where the money is spent, the money's used, the money's given back to the people that got sprayed. But the part that really bothers me is the people that we're talking about getting sprayed and getting abused. These are the best and brightest people in our city, man. You know, when these people aren't marching in the streets, they're volunteering at shelters, they're raising coats for homeless people, they're sleeping out on the sidewalk in front of here for homeless rights. And then when we take the streets, it's suddenly cool to just spray us and pull girls down the street by their hair and stuff. We are not the people that are the enemy. The banks are the enemy, except I just went last Tuesday and just watched a whole bunch of people get pepper sprayed in the face. Well, there was about 75 police officers there. And I know that was the sheriff, and I know that's not you guys always, but it's all the same thing. It's this culture of fear where instead of working for the people, the good people, they're taking the streets, because it's not just the three of you. You guys got families. Everybody's getting screwed over by the banks. But instead, these police are just slaves for the corporation and not for the people that they're supposed to protect. And it's terrifying.
And so here's the video. More police beating people up. Thank you for your time. Sorry, I should have introduced it. This is from January 25th.
I don't know what's going on over here.
Thank you for your testimony. Next four.
Next four are, first, was there a Jack DePew?
I missed.
Okay, the next four are Michael O'Callaghan, Seth Woolley, Elmira Rodriguez, and Lindy Light. And they'll be followed by Ms. Nan Wigmore, Lori Benoit, Linda McKim-Bell, and Roger Widener.
Hi, would you like to begin?
Sure. My name is Lindy Light. I'm a Portland State University student and member of the Coalition for Responsible and Accountable Police Practices.
Can you move your microphone a little closer to your mouth?
Okay.
I can't hear you.
We are opposed to the settlement agreement reached between the City of Portland and the U.S. Department of Justice concerning plans to address unconstitutional use of force by the Portland Police Bureau against members of the community. As residents in Portland, we want to see this self-defeating accountability system completely eradicated. We believe the only way this can occur is through the community being given the responsibility of oversight to ensure our constitutional rights are protected. We fully support the proposal for an independent civilian compliance and reform authority with subpoena power. And we have created a campaign to educate the community about the inadequacy of the agreement that does not include a truly independent civilian reform authority. We refuse to allow the continued suppression of public participation in the process of creating change in the oversight and accountability process. And we feel is so vital in ultimately improving the Portland Police Bureau practices that negatively impact our fellow citizens. The city must allow citizens to elect a civilian authority to monitor the implementation of the Department of Justice reforms, and we will not rest until citizens are at the heart of this process. My personal reason for being here is first to advocate for the fair and equal treatment of my neighbors in East Portland, where I have seen firsthand police harass my Black and Latino neighbors, and the second is because myself and my 11-year-old daughter will continue to be out in the streets standing up for our rights and beliefs, and we want the police to help us and be on our side.
Thanks for your testimony. Welcome.
My name is Seth Woolley. I'm the treasurer of the Portland Green Party and the candidate for Secretary of State this recent election. And I was looking over the document, and there are a number of shortcomings that I already sent an email regarding a proposal. One is that we should use proportional representation using single transferable voting. so ranked ballots, and so that you can choose your order of preference. When we do the vote in the citizen advisory board, it needs to be not that this top five, top ten system, because that allows essentially ringer type situations where if you have a lot of people from the African American community showing up, for example, and they all get first choice votes, they may only get one person or two people maybe on the board, and you want to have proportional representation from the community. And the other thing is, you have 15 people who are voting members, but only five of them appear to come from the public directly. I think every single one of the voting members needs to be from the community and not from some sort of appointees of appointees of appointees situation where it all ties back to the city. So it needs to actually be accountable to the citizens directly. And it says that the COAB shall report to the COCL in paragraph 144. I think it should be the other way around. I think the liaison officer needs to be accountable to the board. And to me, the problem is really about accountability, and the culture in the police department is one of where every interaction with the public, it's all about control. They want to control the situation, and what they really need to be protecting is our civil rights and the Constitution. And I don't think that's happening. We're not getting in the march, for example, on November 3rd, they should have just allowed the First Amendment rights of people to be expressed rather than stopping them.
Thank you for your testimony. Hi, welcome.
Hello, my name is Jessica Elmira Rodriguez, and I'm going to be presenting some video footage of a friend of mine, a U.S. veteran, getting victimized and brutalized by the Portland Public Police. This incident happened on January 25th. You'll notice them stepping onto the sidewalk after we've been told to get on the sidewalk.
They just put those horses right on the sidewalk where people are standing.
Several people, including myself, were arrested that night, pulled off of the sidewalk after being told several times by the PPD to get on the sidewalk. We were pulled off of the sidewalk and then arrested.
Thanks for testimony. Sir?
Howdy, Michael O'Callaghan back at you again. As I have testified to you before, I've been homeless here in Portland for about 6 years. My first week on the streets, I had 16 contacts with officers. I've had a lot of contact with officers and are quite aware. Mr. Mayor, I appreciate you talking about public safety because people on the streets don't have that. We are not safe on the streets at all, and that's one of the reasons why I'm here. Okay? I made a complaint to the Police Conduct Commission, and that was even featured in one of their quarterlies, and the only thing they got right was the date. Okay? Everything else was wrong. Okay? Oversight, overview, give me a break. Dan, you had the police for a while. You couldn't control them. Sam, you took them over. You can't control them. You've heard from all these people here. They're out of control. thank God the Department of Justice came in to give a little control to the process, but this is just a Band-Aid. You guys are going to walk, and we're going to suffer. Okay? Now, the real question here that really can't be answered by the Justice Department or you or the police is, how can the police tell me from someone who has a mental illness? Okay? They got in trouble because they were thumping on the mentally ill. I don't see how you can distinguish. Oh, they thump on us. That's okay. They thump on the mentally ill. That's not okay. And the investigation is accurate. The police do mistreat the mentally ill, but don't stop there, okay? They're not exclusive to them and who they mistreat. But thank God the Justice Department is here. Justice Department, please don't go away. We're going to need you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. How many more?
Six more, including the next four. Ms. Nan Wigmore, Lori Benoit, Linda McKim-Bell, and Roger Widener. And then the last two who signed up were Tom Steenson and Chris Henry.
Hi, welcome. Would you like to begin?
Okay.
Ma'am, would you like to begin?
I'm sorry. My bad.
Okay. Yes, my name is Roger Widener. I'm a former attorney, public prosecutor. In 1975-76, I was the director of the Consumer Fraud Department in the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. I was also the 1998 Oregon Reform Party candidate for governor. The last 24 years for trying to speak in these courtrooms about innocent people in this state having their children and their property taken, I and many others have been arrested many times violently. I was choked to the ground in the Multnomah County Courthouse for trying to come in and speak like I'm speaking now about the abuse that's going on in the system. I was shackled, taken up, and sent to the Oregon Insane Asylum in shackles. While there, I was forcibly held down by guards, needles stuck in me, forced and chained to submit to examinations, being run through CAT scanners, all for trying to speak in the courtroom. I've been violently assaulted and arrested twice in the driveway of my home. In one case, my father, former Portland deputy fire chief, was threatened with arrest when they came to my assistance, repeatedly doing this to me to keep me from speaking in the courtroom. Now, when I do speak in the courtroom, like I'm speaking now, and I get through and I ask them, I said, do you have any questions, any of you? I've had these judges on the stand asking. They have no questions. And so it's that. It's this kind of open, this daylight that is needed to stop this. I said, I'm not only an authority. I ran the Consumer Fraud Department. I'm very much aware. The police used to come in and sit in my office to get me to issue complaints after they would arrest someone for something. And I would say, well, Smith, why did you arrest him? Well, he was giving me the finger or doing something. I said, well, I'm not going to issue a complaint. And they would issue no complaint, and they'd release him. So it's that. It's restoring the rule of law to the police department. They are sworn officers. They take an oath to see that the citizens' rights are observed, and that's what we are intent on seeing happen in this city. My mother came here as an immigrant from Norway.
Your time is up.
Okay, and so I'm very much attached to Portland. It's my town.
Thank you for your testimony. Hi.
Hi, my name is Lori Benoit, and I went to grade school and high school in the Buckman area, and also I graduated from Oregon State. When I was there, and I was in the front row this Saturday when they sprayed us with pepper spray, and they didn't stop. They just kept going and going and going until we weren't even aware. I didn't even know that neighborhood. It was that bad. Right now I'm on medical I have to see doctors, several of them, because I have problems with my eyes and my lungs. I can't breathe. I've never been on an inhaler. I have an inhaler so I can breathe. It's ridiculous. I have a son who's a teenager. We were there. I was there in the front row with other people, many of them teenagers, and we were expressing our rights. And we have a right to do that. And all of a sudden, no warning. I heard no police officer, and I was in the front row, say anything about pepper spray or anything about backup off the street. The only thing that I had heard, A few minutes before then is a female police officer on a car, on a bike said you can't be on the sidewalk and wouldn't let anybody on the sidewalk. And so they basically had us pinned in there. And then they just started spraying out of nowhere. I didn't have my glasses on. The police, they just started spraying. And it was like this and right directly at us. All of a sudden it's coming at us. All these kids, like I said, I have a teenager son as well. All these teenagers, they're all dropping, and I'm there going, oh, my God. And I put my glasses on, and I'm trying to hold up the banner there because the police are all coming up. They destroyed my bike. They've damaged my eyes, damaged my lungs. When is it going to end? I probably have some other emotional things from this, and so do many other people there, because it's emotional trauma that they're doing on us. They keep doing this. I was in Jameson Square sitting in a park. You can't be anywhere in Portland. They tell you to get out of the parks, get off the sidewalk, and get out of the streets. Where can we go to voice our concerns about what's going on? This is ridiculous. Something needs to happen. It's been going on. I've been in Portland since the 60s. I've seen no different any of those years. I've been a mental health professional
Thank
in
you
this
for
town.
Your testimony.
Nothing has changed. No oversight, no transparency, Thank and you. They continue to abuse and kill us and
Thank
use pepper spray, taser us. It's ridiculous. They need to stop. We're
Thank
not going to stand.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your testimony. Next four.
I think I'll speak.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My name is Nan Wigmore, and I have a sign. I push a little walker, and my sign reads, Great Grandmas, no, it doesn't. It says, Grateful Great Grandmas, Support Occupy. The reason for that is that I think I'm older, and I'm looking at all these brave young people, such as the students that came forward with their signs and their bright eyes, and they came to learn about our government. So I thought I was going to just watch and go along. And I have to tell you, in this movement of occupiers, there's so many, as someone else said, so many wise and dedicated people. This is the future. It's the future our police and yourselves are going to be caring for, you know. So I have a couple of instances, I guess I will say. On May 1st, I watched a young woman being hit with a baton from a police officer, and I was with some people who were kind of happy. It was at the end of the day. I'd just come from the library. I saw that, and I was encouraged to stay off the street, and I was with the others. And when I saw her being beaten, she was just walking. I had to step into the street. And when I did, the officers came, and sure enough, they were ready to. So I held up my hands because they should take the grandmothers, because they don't like to watch, have the media and other people watch what happens. And I heard one of the officers that night say to the one next to him, this doesn't look good, because they had this woman who, and then the other one said, yeah, it doesn't look good. And then another one said, take her around the corner. Take me around the corner? It's fine. Why would they take me around the corner? You know, other people beside me were cuffed.
When was this?
May 1st, the May 1st protest. This last weekend, I was right behind Cameron Whitten. He actually fell back into my arms. He had the sign saying, Amanda Fritz for commissioner, all over him, you know. I have those signs at my house. They're in a bag. Why are they there in a bag? Because we were pepper sprayed. I got some pepper spray, not very much. I forgot that that was what was going on. I was watching people, including Cameron, in agony, you know, in agony. This is citizens. This is citizens that vote for you. When someone said, shame on you, I don't like to see, I didn't shame my children. But I have to say you, this is not good. We vote. We vote. This is America. We grew up proud in my generation.
Thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
The last two were Tom Steenson and Chris Henry. Tom Steenson and Chris Henry.